Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. We can all get distracted by our mobile devices. We have a free moment, we start scrolling, or if the phone dings, we instinctively reach to see the notification, even if we're in the midst of a task. Students are no different, and in response, schools have begun implementing cell phone policies. And today we discuss the rationale behind the policies, what changes educators are seeing in the classroom since the policies went into effect, and we discuss strategies for all of us to become more mindful of how and when we're using technology. Joining us in our Woods Hole studio is Jennifer Police. She's principal at Monomoy Regional High. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Kendra Bennett is the principal at Dennis Yarmouth Regional High. Hi, Kendra.
Good morning.
Sarah Dingleday is Martha's Vineyard Regional High School principal. Hi, Sarah. And then Janelle Burley Hoffman is a consultant specializing on the topics of technology, media, health, and well-being. She's the author of the book, iRules, What Every Tech Healthy Family Needs to Know About Selfies, Sexting, Gaming, and Growing Up. Welcome back, Janelle. Good to see you.
Thanks so much, Mindy.
All right. So, Jennifer, I'm going to start with you. When did it become apparent that cell phone use by students was an issue? And describe what that looked like in the classroom.
I mean, I think the easy answer is to say that we notice the rise in cell phone use after the return from the shutdown in
COVID. Yeah,
I think that's the common answer, but I don't want it to get lost in the fact that this was an emerging issue prior to that, and I think COVID accelerated what that looks like, and I think the other principals will probably agree with me on that. And I think what it looks like day to day is, you know, students walk in the hallway passing and their heads are in their phones and they bump into you if they're not, you know, because they're
and
not
each other,
and each other. And, you know, they're sitting at lunch next to each other, but they're communicating through their devices, or they're in the library and they have an earbud in one ear and they're somehow reading or writing. That's become normalized social behavior.
Yeah. Kendra, what did you say?
Yeah, I would say similar. You know, technology was certainly something that was used before the pandemic, but then I think we relied on it so heavily that when we came back, we played with the idea of the phones as a tool. Although we provide students with a one-to-one device, we thought, you know, could the phones help with education? And just like Jen said, you know, you're seeing the lack of socializing, lack of appropriate interactions in the hallways, you know, the bumping in, and, you know, having it be more of an interruption than a tool is kind of when we decided to take a stand, you know, and really enforce and add to our policy.
Yeah. Sarah, you're nodding your head. So, same thing happening in Martha's Vineyard, right?
Sure. And I think sometimes it's also what you don't see. And I think there was, at least from teachers and observed in the classroom, was just a hesitancy to really dig in and engage, whether it's verbally or student production wise. You know, the idea of, I think we all can recall, you know, if you have time at the end of finishing a task, you can either do more or you can disengage. And I think that the disengagement was what we would see. You know, it would be easier just to disengage and get distracted rather than continuing to dig in. And that's really where I think we all know the X factor of education is. It's those moments in time that aren't scripted or that aren't completely tied to a prompt. And I think that's what we saw lacking as a result of technology, phones being one, or even just an open computer on the desk.
Yeah. Now, before you had school-wide policies, were teachers managing the cell phone use in their classrooms? And if so, what were the challenges to that approach? Anybody? Go ahead, Jennifer.
Do you want me to start?
Yeah. Sure.
We had a cell phone policy prior to 2020. And so we have cell phone caddies in which students check their devices when they enter the classroom. And we're actually, we still use that today. Mm-hmm. And this was part of kind of the fabric of our school prior to the explosion. And that doesn't mean that it hasn't gotten more difficult. And I don't want to lose sight of that. So the quick answer is yes, our teachers were monitoring that in their classrooms, but we have over time added more specific language in our handbook, et cetera, et cetera.
What about for you, Kendra?
Yeah, I was going to echo the same thing. We've had a cell phone and appropriate technology use policy for years, and teachers, you know, were kind of managing that. And of course, we on the tech side can monitor students' devices and respond, but there was this explosion that you know, I'm continuing to use the same policy, but now there's language supporting it. There, we have cell phone lockers in every classroom that we use, you know, grant money to purchase. So now there's tools and additional language that really supports an existing policy we've always had. And then I think too, just having most, you know, your entire staff on the same page. Yes. So the teachers don't feel like it's a lift they're doing on their own. They're getting support from admin. They're getting support from counselors, from support staff. You know, everyone is eyes out and wanting to engage with students socially and see them socially engage with each other appropriately. Mm-hmm. So with all of us being on the same page, we're enforcing really an existing policy.
And Sarah, Martha's Vineyard Regional High School implemented their cell phone policy in September, right? So tell us, explain what the policy is there.
So I think so many of us were probably in a similar spot. We had caddies that students would come in and during instructional time put their phones in their caddies or put the phones in a cell phone locker. In September, we changed and we became an away for the day school, which is our language for students can that the phones need to be away from when they come in at 7:40 until 2:05. So we have yonder pouches. Some seniors, I'll say, leave it in the car, and that's we're not digging through bags to check that. But the expectation is that when you're in the building, the phone is locked in a yonder pouch until you dismiss for the day. Mm. So that's been the big shift for us. We went from, I think, the management in the classroom, which, yes, it was something that I think united the teachers. Teachers were behind it. It was still sometimes hard to manage, we found. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at, you know, similar to DY, we received grant money last year and we had a teacher group come together, teacher and staff to decide how we wanted to spend that money. And we debated getting lockers and doing it in the classroom or moving to the yonder pouches. And the committee ultimately decided to do fully away for the day. And I feel like it was sort of a galvanizing piece. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are right now.
Yeah, Kendra.
Yeah, I just in hearing you talk, Sarah, it made me think of something. I think what's so important in our approach to and enforcing something that kind of already existed was we brought a cell phone committee together as well. And it was volunteer. And it was, you know, we brought stakeholders in, teachers, parents, myself. And, you know, we met monthly in preparation. But I think getting more voices and more people on board really, really helped. And so I appreciate that too with the decision. You're not just spending grant money the best way a few people think. This is what we've decided on. We've weighed pros and cons. We've, you know, thought about what's going to happen if this, what's our response going to be if that, because it can be a very layered topic. So yeah, if anyone's looking to change a policy or enforce something, doing that legwork, you know, sometimes you want to quickly be like, oh, this is the best idea. I want to just jump to it. But taking that time to listen to people and getting a committee on board to send something out is really useful.
Yeah, Janelle, I'd love to hear your thoughts because I know you work with schools all over the place. I know you're probably listening to, what they're saying is probably ringing true, right?
Yeah, I think what's an important point here, and I think it's really demonstrated in the conversation this far, is how much work goes into shifting policy from the administrative level and that, like, so I think sometimes to families and communities, things seem like they're just like plucking policy and changing things, but there is a lot of foundation that goes into that. And so in my work, working, you know, across the U.S. and really connected to a lot of school administrators and seeing the stress that's on them just in general, but specifically around this topic, just kind of reminding listeners of how much really goes into that and how much work goes into that. And also shout out to the teachers who are often having to kind of like monitor and manage this and uphold the policies that get put into place. These aren't easy things to do. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, when I hear about like away for the day or all of these, it makes like a ton of functional sense in terms of encouraging the social connection, encouraging attention and things like that. But whenever there's like a ban or a removal of phones, like there's this call to action to remind us that that doesn't mean the internet doesn't exist, right? So there's an inherent implication there that the internet is everywhere. And so we still need to, like I was recently in a middle school where they don't use phones, personal devices during the day, but they certainly use the internet. And so a group of students had created a shared Google Doc where they were treating it like Instagram. So they were putting pictures and comments, and then they were sharing it among their peers.
Oh, they're so clever.
Which is totally allowed because they're, you know, not the social part, but the communicating over Google Docs is totally allowed because they're editing docs and collaborating in that way. And so what I want to remind just kind of families in general and schools of is that the internet is still present, which means social technology is still present. Yeah. And so we're still having to manage and monitor that. I mean, I certainly know students who have put burner phones into kind of some of the pouches, mm-hmm. and then they're able to use their device when they go to the bathroom or in the locker room. And so it's, we still need digital citizenship education. We still need to be talking about safety, appropriate media criticism, media literacy, like all of these things still exist in the world that our kids live in. So I think it's an and conversation. Like if a school is changing their policy, it doesn't mean, okay, now we're absolved from talking about the internet and safety. It's an and. This policy is here for these reasons, right? Really intentional, really mindful, like we heard today. But then also, how do we still integrate these important topics that are part of being a high school student in 2024, 2025, and beyond?
Yeah. Do you know, we all know the allure of our devices. We hear the ding of that text, or we have a minute to kill, and we start scrolling through social media. What do we know about how these short bursts of distraction impacts our attention span?
Yeah, generally speaking, and we're seeing this, so anything we're talking about with adolescents, we can really think about ourselves as adults with the fully developed brain. So anything we're struggling with, we can be sure that an adolescent is struggling with. So generally the thinking is like a disruption, and that doesn't just have to be tech, takes 25 minutes to get back to the task you were working on, right? So that kind of like being able to have that interruption and kind of get back to that paper or back to that studying or back to that, you know, email we're writing, it takes a little bit of time to jump tracks and kind of get refocused. Certainly, there's many students we know that can multitask or need to hear some distractions or need to doodle while they're, working on something. So it's not a one size fits all, but it can be most of the time what I hear from teenagers is that their homework is supposed to take about 2 hours, say, but it's taking them 4 or 5 hours because of that exact thing that we're talking about, right? Those distractions can really prolong how much time it actually takes to keep things done. And that informs when they're going to sleep. That informs, you know, some of their interpersonal relationships, social relationships, doing their tasks at home, you know, coming down for dinner. So I like to look at this through the whole child, whether the whole community, the whole school approach there, because it's really a conversation around like health and well-being in addition to digital strategies and focus and study habits and things like that.
Yeah. We're talking about cell phone policies at area high schools. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about cell phone policies at some area high schools and what changes educators are seeing in the classroom since the policies went into effect. We're also discussing strategies for all of us to become more mindful of how and when we're using technology. With us is Jennifer Police, principal at Monomoy Regional High School, Kendra Bennett, Dennis Yarmouth Regional High School principal, Sarah Dingleday, Martha's Vineyard Regional High School principal, and Janelle Burley Hoffman, consultant specializing in topics of technology, media, health, and well-being. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Sarah, we mentioned your policy went into effect in September. So what are you hearing from students?
So I'll first say what we're hearing from teachers. I think teachers feel very pleased. So from the staff perspective, they're very pleased. Students, we haven't heard a ton. I think we were anticipating, we did a lot of legwork ahead of time, like we were mentioning. We spoke to all the English classes when we were rolling out the implementation. We had some community forums. We wanted to hear the feedback of what people's concerns were so that people could hear what our plan was to address it. We wanted to be clear also that the committee, which had done a lot of research, had made a decision about how we were going to move forward and that it was based in not a punitive approach, but we believed it was going to be better for the school culture. And this is why. And we shared the research. One of the teachers on that committee put together a slideshow, and then we went kind of on tour to all the classes to share the reasons why. I think our biggest concern was that people didn't think it was going to be about taking something away, but we were offering a more engaged, less distracted mm-hmm. student or school yeah. culture. So we yeah. wanted to frame it that way. We did a lot of work preparing over the summer, and I think we were still anticipating that first week of how it would go. And we were just delighted. It was very smooth. There was, you know, I think even by the first week we kept talking about, and the students were like, we're done. Like, it's fine. It's in, we understand it. Like, we don't need to keep discussing it. And I think since then there's been a pretty smooth transition. Yeah. We know that there's, as you mentioned, I think, Janelle, there's kids that are evading it, but we don't see phones. We really don't. It is very rare that we spot a phone or that we see a phone or we have to confiscate a phone. So it shifted pretty quickly. And I just want to give our student body all that credit. They have embraced it. If they like it or dislike it, if it's inconvenient or not, they're still upholding it. And our teachers feel quite relieved. So we feel pretty good about how it's going. We also want to make sure that we survey students at the end of the year, you know, give it a year, see where they're at, see where the tweaks can come. As of now, just, you know, living in it, it feels pretty good.
Yeah. Kendra, what about, and it's teachers were going to be my next question. I know you started with teachers, but Kendra, staff, parents, students, what are you hearing?
Yes, I would say same. You know, again, that legwork works and it helps, but I really want to echo what Sarah said. It's really messaging what you're going to gain, not what you're losing. And I think, you know, in the first few weeks, honestly, I had school assemblies. So maybe that was the only time there was a reaction. And that was more, you know, the deep breath in or the looking at friends. But after that, you know, students are stopping administration in the hallway. And like Janelle said, they're like, I can't believe how much faster I'm getting my work done. Teachers actually do want to get you to understand this. So they're tuning in more. They're more engaged. I did a lot of visiting of classrooms in the beginning of the year. And more so than last year, students and teachers are inviting me in to participate in the lesson. And students are asking me questions and asking my opinion. And so that engagement and what you're gaining from this is so much more than, you know, what students think they're losing. And so from students, it was positive. Again, now we're, I don't like, it is definitely part of the culture. You know, students are coming in tardy and just putting their phones right in the locker without, you know, having missed the beginning routine of it. So that's a great thing. But just like anything else, reestablishing, resetting, getting all staff and students on board is something that we'll be doing throughout the year. We have a plan to visit every classroom in the beginning of term two. So just like Sarah said, they went on tour. We're going to be going on tour in the beginning of term two. So again, it's like anything, but it's something worth staying on top of because the engagement and student achievement is, you know, something worth fighting for.
Yeah, Jennifer, what about you? Similar?
Yeah, I mean, I would say similarly to Kendra, it's been part of our culture for so long that it wasn't a shift per se. We, you know, I think our students feel like, and we certainly communicate this, that it's a reasonable ask. This is not something that is unreasonable. And I think that they also understand that. And we do have our 1 hour JOSM hour, which is an intervention hour in the middle of our school day. And our kids have access to it then. So they know that that's really their time. We also visit our policy in the very beginning of the year with all of our kids, and then we do it again at the change of the semester. And you know, our infractions are, I think last year our cell phone infractions were less than 7% of the overall conduct referral. So I think
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Generally, I'm thinking, you know, it's a lot of peer pressure, right? As we've talked about many times, but just that social media and being connected all the time. Do you find that it sounds like from what they're saying that some of these kids may even be feeling like, whew, I don't have to be connected 24/7, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective that kind of just like that uniform policy for teachers, that uniform policy for students, kind of everyone's in the same boat. So I think that could be, it's not going classroom to classroom, you know, where one teacher allows it and one teacher doesn't. So that might bring some relief. And certainly I think if you talk to teenagers, they'll tell you that they can manage it themselves and they can figure it out. And they were okay before anyway, and they were super focused, you know, and they're pretty protective of their life online. And I understand that makes a lot of sense to me. And so again, like everything to echo everything here, you know, it's really about approach. It's about language. It's about partnership. It's about intentionality. And it's not about villainizing the tech. I think that's when we see kids really want to defend it and kind of sneak and counter it, is when it's like technology is ruining children or kids don't know how to socialize. Because, I mean, I see thousands and thousands of children, young people doing incredible things out in the world and connecting and building relationships and having positive impact on the world. And so I think kids don't want that stigma of, you know, always being heads down and not knowing how to connect, because in reality, they're incredible at it. And, you know, as a mother of five children myself, all young adults, ages 17 to 25, and, you know, the kids really will be all right. So I hope there's this like reassuring part that kind of comes out of this, is like, some of these policies or reasons are to help deepen the education, help deepen the process of learning, help, you know, keep attention. But we live in a world, like we talked about with the internet, and that won't be a barrier to raising great people, right? Mm-hmm. So I think when that comes along with it, there certainly might be some relief for students, as long as they're not feeling targeted or accused right. of being bad people because of the internet.
Right. Kendra?
Yeah, Janelle just made me think of this, a really great point that, you know, kids are doing amazing things with technology. And, you know, like she said earlier, it's not like the internet doesn't exist. We also are embracing all of that technology. We're getting these students ready for, you know, their jobs outside of here. That's going to include all of these problem solving with technology mm-hmm. skills. So one thing at DY, we're certainly ramping up because on the teacher side and student desire, our robotics, our graphic design classes, our computer science courses. And with that, I've written a lot of school-wide goals for teachers to, you know, choose to take on as their goal. And one of them is a digital literacy goal, so that digital literacy can be seen across content. I talked to the robotics teacher, and it's always about a problem. And he's telling students, okay, how are you going to figure it out? How are you going to figure it out? And being okay to fail and using technology, you know, to create something new and be innovative. And I'm inviting teachers to embrace that in other content areas. You know, it might not be with something like a robot in circuits, but you can use technology to solve a problem in an English class, in a science class, in a music class. So really, you know, taking the positive side of what technology and the internet can offer in terms of academics is something I want our whole staff looking at.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't sound like you're having a whole lot of challenges enforcing this policy. So what are the consequences for the students who don't follow the policy?
Well, the phone stays with me on my desk.
On your desk. Yes. Same for you, Kendra and Sarah?
Same for me. Yep.
Yeah, we're still, you know, we knew that we had to live in this for a little while to kind of figure out all of those things. I think our policy is predicated on a high degree of trust with students. Yep. And so I think if the trust is broken, then I think we have to look at how we kind of regain that and we kind of reinforce what the expectations are. And that's always challenging. I will say that as an administrator this year, I am not enforcing phone stuff as much as I used to have to. You know, there was a lot of phone conversation that happened in previous years. And similar to my colleagues on the Cape, like it has always been an issue. This is not a new thing. COVID certainly exacerbated it. But it was always part of being a school administrator, is thinking through our expectations around cell phone use. But this year, I feel like it's much lighter. And we are still working to see how we reset if a student like puts a fake phone in the pouch, or a student does it, you know, says that they do it and don't do that. And so that has been probably the first few weeks, is us figuring out how we love the honeymoon. It was a great honeymoon phase. It worked really well. It is part of our culture right now. And we need to find a way to keep maintaining it in a way that feels positive and not punitive, but a way that still makes students understand what the expectations are. So we haven't completely answered the consequence question yet, but we're working on it.
What about smartwatches, which can receive calls and texts? Are they included in the policy? For you, Sarah, they are, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Everybody, yeah? Saying yes? Yes. That was one I wondered, because, yeah. You know, I mean, so they take the smartwatches off and put them in the pouches or the locker? Yeah? Okay.
Yes, we ask that they put earbuds and watches in there. I will say that we're probably at 75, or I'm going to be honest, I know that that doesn't always happen. But if we see it being used inappropriately, it highlights it and we can address it similarly.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this is a question for Janelle or for the principals, but what are you hearing from your colleagues who teach or administrate middle and elementary schools? Is cell phone use by these younger students an issue? Maybe I'll start with the principals and then I'll come to you, Janelle, because you're working with a lot of schools. What are you hearing?
I know at our middle school, students have to check them in with their homeroom teacher at the beginning of the day, and then they get them when the day ends.
Mm-hmm. Kendra?
Yeah, I would. So that's, we have the same setup with our middle school. They check it in an advisory and they get it back at the end. But we did work together with the middle school on the grant and messaging. So although students have at the high school, we say during passing and at lunch, they can have their, they have access to their phones. But it's a nice progression from the middle school up to us. We have the same lockers. So again, we're in our, we're getting the first eighth grade year at the high school that had it locked up all day at the middle school. So we're hoping it becomes, again, more of that culture and maybe less going on tour or messaging, but they're used to having it, you know, mm-hmm. out of their possession for the school day.
Yeah. How about you, Sarah?
So it's different at the different schools. I think the norm expectation is that they're away and that they're not visible. I think in some schools they put them in their own lockers. There is a elementary middle school on the island that preceded us that had the Yonder pouches a year before we did. So that's familiar to that group of students. So general expectation that they're away, different ways of enforcing that.
Yeah. What are, you know, what are we seeing on all the schools you visit? Is it an issue in the middle and elementary schools?
Yeah, I think absolutely a trend that I'm seeing that even if middle schools hadn't rolled out a personal device policy that they have now. And for the most part, I would say almost all of the schools I'm in, whether they're public schools, private schools, you know, that they're middle school and elementary school, they're not allowed to have personal devices out in school or even really in school, maybe in a backpack in a locker or something like that. But it's the understanding that for middle school and for that developing brain and that adolescent brain, it's just better to not have the option. And that's what I've seen this shift is like, sometimes it's been corrective and sometimes it's always been there. But I think generally speaking, not allowing that in the middle and elementary schools.
Yeah. All right, Janelle, let's, out of school, are we seeing kids in that elementary school age and younger with cell phones? Can you talk about things that parents should be aware of before giving an elementary school student a phone?
Yeah. So my disclaimer here is that even if we delay a phone, right? So often I get asked the question, what's the right age for a phone? What's the right, you know, what's the right timeline for that? And so I invite families to really think about their own child, their own need, their own values. Not all kids are created equal at different ages and stages, right? So we're looking at developmentally appropriate. And then we're also looking at family readiness, right? And we're looking at it through the lens of the whole child. So that's a little bit of the formula, which is a big answer to that. But I would say a lot of families will say that they maybe aren't giving a phone or a device till middle school, maybe older elementary, middle school is kind of when I see families first having the thought of, do I want to give my child a phone? But what I will say is very similar to that conversation we were having about phones in the classroom, is just because we say no to a phone doesn't mean that our kids aren't using social technology, right? So I want to reframe the conversation around like, what is social media? So I think any opportunity we have to communicate with others, so that can be email, that can be texting, that can be the gaming chat of Roblox or Minecraft, like that is all social media. Yes. So while a family might say to me, oh, Janelle, I'm not getting my kid a phone until she goes to high school, that child might have been using social technology since 5 or 6 years old in some of these YouTube comment section or a gaming platform. So again, just because we've said no to a device doesn't mean that we should ignore the internet, right? We wanna be parenting, we wanna be setting our kids up for safety, for expectations, for boundaries, for what we wanna see from, and it's an opportunity to scaffold use for when they do get a device, right? So we wanna build these skills so they know how to be safe, they know how to ask for help, they know what to look for when they go online, and they use it for all the great things as well. But certainly, you know, I've been doing this work specifically for 14 years, and first schools were inviting me or communities were inviting me because of kind of the 16 plus, like the later mm-hmm. teenage years. And now I'm in schools, I'm often talking to 8-year-olds about how do you stay safe online? And when you're in a gaming chat, what's appropriate personal information to share? So certainly the conversation has been wide open to kids and families of all ages.
So, you know, as parents thinking here, going, wow, I hadn't thought about that, right? You know, the gaming, especially because most kids are doing some kind of gaming.
Absolutely.
So at what age do you think parents should start having these conversations with their kids?
As soon as we watch a YouTube video, as soon as we're watching any sort of programming. So I think a lot of times that first happens around preschool, I would say, where we might, you know, like to stream a certain show. And so really building in, I see the kind of tech conversation as the way we would talk about drugs and alcohol and substance use, the way we would talk about sexual health, the way we would talk about safety in general, like wearing your seatbelt, a bike helmet, how to cross the street, and building in the conversation around technology and scaffolding it through ages and stages of development in the same exact way we would around any other health and wellness and safety conversation.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing cell phone policies in some area high schools and strategies for all of us to become more mindful of how and when we're using technology. With us is Jennifer Police, principal at Monomoy Regional High School, Kendra Bennett, Dennis Yarmouth Regional High School principal, Sarah Dingleday, Martha's Vineyard Regional High School principal, and Janelle Burley Hoffman, a consultant specializing on the topics of technology, media, health, and well-being. She's the author of the book, iRules, What Every Tech-Healthy Family Needs to Know About Selfies, Sexting, Gaming, and Growing Up. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Laura is giving us a call from West Tisbury. Hi, Laura.
Hello, good morning. I just wanted to add my voice as a parent of a junior at the Martha's Vineyard Regional High School. I just really appreciate our principal's efforts to help the students and the community put their cell phones and other distractions away during the day. As a parent, I think it's just so important for not only the kids, but for adults to see the example set by how we can really focus more with these devices away. And I think it also can only help the teachers. I can't imagine being a teacher in this day and age with this kind of distraction. So I really appreciate our principal's efforts.
Oh, Laura, thank you. Thanks for calling. Appreciate that. You know, as she was saying examples, Janelle, I was just thinking, you know, we're telling kids, all right, you can't have your head buried in the phone. And then here we are, right, with our buried in our phone. So we need to be aware of that too, right?
Yeah, and this isn't to shame parents. Like, we're all struggling with it. It's actually a place we can bond with our kids. Like, hey, I get it, right? I go through that too. It's a lot to manage. The devices are built to keep us on them, right? With the attention economy, really. And so having some of those conversations with our kids, but also that we deserve sleep and we deserve to have an end of our workday and we deserve to, you know, put our screens down and, you know, check in with the people that we care about in our personal lives. So yeah, really thinking of this, not because it makes you a better parent, but also you deserve to have some time and space away from your screens. And I think it's also a result of COVID where home and work started to blend for a lot of professionals, right? And so how do we build those boundaries in our own lives so that, you know, just because we can work from everywhere doesn't mean we should work from everywhere, right? So it's a lot there.
It's funny you say that because as everybody knows, I have a 9-year-old grandson that I'm raising, and his thing recently is, well, you know, sometimes you get to work from home. Why can't I do school from home?
Yeah, they're paying attention. That's for sure.
Exactly.
That is absolutely for sure.
Now, going back to like where we introduce kids to all these conversations, there are some schools that provide devices, typically the Chromebook, which they get, you know, right in kindergarten for students. And what are your thoughts on, and I don't know if the principals want to chime in on this or Janelle, are schools having these conversations with kids when they're giving them the Chromebooks? Anybody?
Yeah, we have an acceptable use. We have an acceptable use policy that's, you know, it's through the entire district, but kids do get a 1-to-1 device, but when they're in the eighth grade, and then that carries through. Mm-hmm. So we are part of the problem, per se.
Anybody else have thoughts on that?
I can.
Go ahead, Sarah.
So I mean, we do also, we transitioned to 1-to-1 as well this year. We did it all at once. And I would say that I think I think the points that you're raising, Janelle, are really well, you know, like embedding that education in as well is something I think we do, we can still do better. And I think that whole conversation about you take the phones out of hands, there's still the internet, there's still availability of content. And there's appropriate content in school and there's inappropriate content in school. I think we could probably do better. I know our teachers do that. We are now wrestling with kind of expanding our acceptable use to include AI and ChatGPT, which I'm sure all high schools out there are doing. So it's something we think about a lot. And we know that we still have a long ways to go to make sure that it feels clear and pervasive in the student culture as well.
Yeah. Kendra, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would just agree. You know, again, we have the acceptable use policy. We also could do better on that educational piece on what's appropriate use of technology. But we do take advantage, like when students are using the one-to-one device, we have, you know, some monitoring softwares. And if we have, you know, if students are researching something in their AP psychology class and it sparks something, it's on those one-offs, it's nice to have that conversation. You know, this is an appropriate, you know, you're researching for a project. Great. I'm glad we got to have this conversation. You know, we're concerned if, you know, if you were researching this without the assignment, this would spark another conversation. So it's nice to bring kids down and have that one-on-one conversation.
Yeah. Janelle, thoughts?
Yeah, I strongly believe in, you know, continuous education around these issues. And I think it, with the goal, right, of that our kids will go off to the workforce or go off to university and the internet will be there and they have to coexist with it, right? So I currently have 3 undergraduate students myself and, you know, figuring out when I pay attention in a lecture, what kind of sleep do I need, how much video gaming is enough so that I can get my studies and my work done. And some of the college students I talk to, you know, tell me about their strategies, which is like they'll turn, they'll take, say, TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat off their phone during finals week because they know it's just going to eat up some of their hours. I just talked to a teenager in New York City recently who told me she put parental controls on her phone because she wants to be able to go to sleep at a certain time. So it's really interesting to kind of spin it to see some of the strategies that kids have learned, what they need over the years. And I really think that's the call to action as educators and caretakers of kids is like, how do we kind of coach and guide them with education and then help them make some healthy choices so that ultimately, like everything else we do in education, they can do that independently, right? We're familiar with that metaphor with like the driver's license, for example, right? We scaffold really into that before a child is independently driving. We know that with a curfew, right? Like what's appropriate for a freshman is different than a senior. So really thinking about this through scaffolding so that we can help them have a healthy relationship to technology long after they're in our schools and in our communities.
Yeah. I think it might be difficult too. I know that I'm a grandparent raising a grandchild, and I know there are a lot of other grandparents in our listening area raising grandchildren. We didn't grow up with this technology, and it can be really difficult. So, Janelle, I know I ask this every time you're here. Advice for those of us who are not as you know, technically inclined, and we have to help these young people who know a whole lot more than we do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think schools are a great place to start as like resources, like places like Common Sense Media, which has great, great free digestible information to parents and caregivers. It has ratings and summaries about different apps and games and social media platforms. I think the Family Online Safety Institute is a great resource. It's a national nonprofit that has a good digital parenting place. So I think schools and pediatricians, mental health professionals, they can really roll out some of these resources. But one of my favorite tools for families is to let your child or your grandchild be the expert and have them teach you, mm-hmm. right? So get parallel with them, like, how does Roblox work? And why do you love Fortnite so much? Show me what you mean when you're buying, you want to buy a skin. What does that mean? So mm-hmm. letting them be the expert and getting parallel with them and having that literacy and that fluency as a leader of our families is really important. And it's just a fun dynamic for bonding, for trust building, that you're curious about their world. So that's another great way for us to get educated as well.
Yeah, that's a good one. So there are, I'm sure, parents concerned about their child not having their phone if there is an emergency. And sadly, when we're talking about emergency, could be school shooting, right? A lot of concern around that. They want their child to be able to call 911 or to be able to call their parents. Is anybody hearing that from parents?
Yes.
You are? Yeah. What do you tell them?
I mean, I just tell them that, you know, the reality is that adults will have their phones in those situations. We use an app, like we are controlled by apps, and that's the reality. And I would love to just make a comment about that. But we use an app at the high school called Crisis Go, and it allows us to communicate adults in the event of some sort of emergency, as well as with central office and other schools, as well as public safety.
Anybody else have thoughts on that? Sarah, you're nodding your head. You have the same thing?
Yeah, of course. When we were deliberating over this policy, we heard a lot, and I mean, they're genuine concerns. I think there's both the safety concern and there's the desire to be in touch in case of emergency, which I think are two separate things. I think safety wise, all the emergency responders, and we actually had an organization called Synergy come and give us, you know, a full safety plan and train our staff. Safety wise, I think the consensus is that it's better if there isn't disinformation and that people, you know, students don't have full access to cell phones in a crisis. But the other thing that I think is also compelling and poignant is just the idea of being in touch with your kid in a crisis. And so that we had less of an answer for, and I understand that that's nerve wracking and that's scary, but our first priority is safety in those situations. So we felt like even if it doesn't feel wonderful, we do believe that the safest thing is to have adults have their phones, have first responders be in contact, and have one message going out and delivered to keep safety for all.
Kendra,
hear that.
Kendra, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, phones are one part of that, you know, if you're in a crisis. So again, we are implementing, you know, a standard response protocol for the entire district. And I think communicating to teachers, to students, to parents, all stakeholders, what is your safety protocol, can give a lot of comfort. You know, again, safety is the number one thing. And then, you know, our lighter messaging is that, you know, with the cell phone lockers, they come with expectations for the teacher. And one of them is that the locker is located in the classroom safe spot. So if we were ever in a situation, students were in their safe spot, locked down, they could have access to their phones. Because again, you know, being in touch with your child in a time of crisis might give some comfort. And then they're mobile. They're about less than 5 pounds, their suitcase. So if we were to evacuate, teachers can take that with them. So just assuring that we have a really strong, secure, larger safety response. And then also, what is it going to look like to get access to your phone so you can get in touch with your kids, I think has alleviated some of the stress.
Yeah. Janelle, you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just think reassuring parents that schools are a place and there's a lot of trusted, caring adults there, and there's processes and protocol in place. And I think I mean that generally, not just like outside of a like worst case scenario crisis, right? Just in the day-to-day operations of like, you know, going through the main office or going through the nurse's office, like that's okay to trust those systems, that those systems are built out with caring adults in our community.
Yeah. Teachers, of course, are role models. And we talked about kind of parents' influence when we have our heads in our phones. What kinds of conversations are you having with faculty about their cell phone use around students? Kendra, you want to start?
I can start. Yeah. Yeah. Again, they're models. I mean, I don't expect the staff to be buried in their phones either. Another thing, again, being at the high school, you can have some transparency with this age group of kids. You know, if you can say, I'm waiting for a call from the mechanic, it could come at any time. That's why I have my phone out, and have that conversation with them, I think will gain a lot of respect and buy-in. I have some teachers that will put their phone in the locker with the students' phones to say, you know, I'm engaged with you, I'm in class with you, I never have my phone on me. So when I take a phone in the hallway or something, I'll say, look, I want to be engaged with you. And again, I message that what I'm gaining by not having my phone at work is I'm fully engaged in work. I'm fully engaged here with you as a student. I want to hear what you have to say. I have all ears, no earbuds, no phone. But in the moment where you might need to have your phone out, really explaining to them, this is not so I can scroll social media. I'm just, you know, maybe my child's pediatrician's calling. It'll be a 5-minute conversation. And the kids really do respect that. You know, just like Jen said with Jossum, it's like if weather was terrible and practices were canceled, there's some flexibility. Like, hey, can I tell my mom we don't have practice, so I'm taking the bus? Those moments, you know, will help ease the rest of the educational day. The student's not stressed about how am I going to get home? How am I going to get home? Practice is canceled. So I think it goes two ways, that responsible use.
Yeah. Jen?
I completely agree. And I think, you know, it's not necessarily about complete abstinence, because that's not realistic. Mm-hmm. But I think it's about, it circles back to what Janelle was basically saying, which is this is about education. And, you know, we have a responsibility. It's not just academic content all the time. We have a responsibility to teach kids skills in which they can succeed in a college or career environment. Mm-hmm. And the world that we live in, and it involves phones.
Yeah.
And we have to recognize that.
Right. In the spring, the Surgeon General issued an advisory about the health impacts of social media on youth mental health. How are we, both as educators and parents, talking with students about the impacts of social media? And Janelle, I guess this is a question for you. And then is it part of a curriculum? And if not, should it be? Janelle, we'll start with you.
Sure. So yeah, absolutely. There were some things that happened over the summer, I think just culturally, that raised a lot of attention and panic in parents, and some of that is warranted, but I think we always want to look at technology as in context, right? It's not happening in a silo, right? So kids are reporting and talking more about mental health. There's more conversation, there's more education, there's more language around it. So I think, again, this is an and conversation, that technology can negatively impact mental health, and so can a lot of other things. Right? Technology can positively build connection, help kids get education. When I ask them, what do you love about technology? You know, and they'll tell me, like, I feel connected to issues going on in the world. I feel that it's really a convenient tool. I feel like if I have a hobby, like I was just with some middle school students and they had taught themselves different languages. They had taught themselves to play an instrument, right? So really celebrating those things. So I think sometimes we want to, culturally, we tend to look at a headline or a quick look and we panic. And then that panic can often make us feel helpless. And so we kind of do nothing except be like, I hate phones, I want it to go away. And instead of kind of engaging of like, okay, what are some protective factors if my child is on social media, right? What are some of the conversations we have to have about some photos we might see from an influencer where there's been an editing tool used, right? So going right towards those conversations instead of just this kind of like cultural panic that our kids don't stand a chance against technology.
Yeah. Sarah, you're Ned, and you had your thoughts on that. And is it part of a curriculum? Should it be?
Yeah. I mean, I think we have a year-long 10th grade health class. I mean, I think it should obviously be before 10th grade health. So there is some conversation, I think, in terms of how it's addressed in middle schools and up. But it is a reality. And I think there's two sides of it. And I just think management, you know, learning how to manage it. And also the hardest part about the phone is just the constant prevalence of it mm-hmm. on you and how you can distance yourself from things. You know, I think learning how to filter through negative imagery or like the inevitable comparison that teenagers do with one another, and then having it constantly with you. So I think, you know, we're hoping that at least our policy in the school puts pause on that for a time when students' minds should be engaged elsewhere. Philosophically, that's kind of where we are. And I think that's where our teachers are fairly united. And then finding ways to almost build skills that are I want to say pro-social, because I hear what you're saying too, that can be online too, but trying to almost immunize students against the negative impact of social media. How can there be really positive face-to-face engagement? How can there be playing Uno or playing cards or playing chess in the cafeteria and interacting face-to-face with students there? How can you have really positive conversations with adults that perhaps 2 years ago you would have been intimidated to have? How can you build those little moments in time that are kind of like the antidote to perhaps negative messaging that they get on social media?
Yeah. Got about 30 seconds. Jen, you want to, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, as it relates to the content in our health classes, this is a primary focus in grades 8, 9, and 10. In grades 11 and 12, we actually run a course called Health Issues in Society. Again, a primary focus. Mm-hmm. We have a social studies elective called Media and Society, and it captures all of it.
Yeah. All right. Jennifer Police is principal at Monomoy Regional High School. Kendra Bennett's the principal at Dennis Yarmouth Regional High School. Sarah Dingleday is principal at Martha's Vineyard Regional High. And Janelle Burley Hoffman, consultant specializing in the topics of technology, media, health, and well-being. She's also the author of iRules, What Every Tech Healthy Family Needs to Know About Selfies, Sexting, Gaming, and Growing Up. Thank you all for being here and talking about this morning. Very interesting. Thanks so much. I'm Mindy
Todd.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.